continue now with our discussion with Jane Levy, author of The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle, and the End of America's Innocence.
How much did the fact that he played for the Yankees enter into his fame? For example, Bob Feller died yesterday, and he certainly had his place in American culture. But if Mantle had been on the Indians, let's say, and Feller had been on the Yankees, would they have been perceived differently?
Sure. Absolutely. There is no doubt that he benefited greatly by being, as did the Yankees benefit greatly from his presence, from being in what was then the undiluted media capital of the Western world. We didn't even use the word media then, you know, but that's what it was. From the incontrovertible center of the baseball universe at a time when really baseball didn't have any rivals for the attention of, you know, the American public. I mean, it was just on the eve of the college betting scandals. The NBA wasn't what the NBA is, nor was the National Football League what it is. You know, college football maybe then, still boxing. But really, baseball was unrivaled in its place in American culture. And so, yeah, to have Mickey Mantle a fixture in America's living rooms seemingly every fall, and, you know, 12 of the first 14 years of his career, certainly made him more than a regional figure. You know, somebody said to me, I could look it up. I think it was Jim Cott, or, you know, if he'd been played in a different city, you know, if played in Kansas City or St. Louis or whatever, yeah, he'd be a great ball player, but he wouldn't be Mickey Mantle. You know, and the odd thing is, who knows how he would have done in another city? You know, with a different ballpark. You know, he used to talk about how Yankee Stadium was a bad ballpark for him. Well, how would he have done if the temptations of New York that everybody, you know, ascribe so much to his undoing, you know, were less? Would he have been better off playing in a place with less pressure and didn't have to follow DiMaggio and closer to home? You know, or would he have faced the same temptations because he would have been on the road the same way? You know, those are some of the imponderables that you just can't really know. But I think the part about his being synonymous with the Yankees and their legacy of power and triumph and their centrality in the history of the game, you know, certainly determined in a lot of how he is remembered and why he is a national figure rather than just a guy who played.
I'd like to switch gears for just a bit and talk about the writing process. You mentioned that it took you a long time to write that one sentence, and you worked on this book for a long time. At what point were you satisfied that you had included everything you wanted to?
I'm not yet. I'm still in my head rewriting. This happens, I think, to probably every writer who writes something. You hear from people who offer you different leads and more tantalizing anecdotes better visuals of a particular moment. I mean, Bobby Brown told me four great stories that I'm going to be sure to include in the paperback, you know, one of which, it's not like I didn't say this, but this is great. You know, he said when Mickey Mantle ran at the beginning, he kicked up tufts of dirt that were higher than his head or as high as his head.
So have you gotten a lot of responses like that after the book came out?
Yeah, I do.
Now, you're you've done two baseball biographies, and both have been about heroic figures who managed to achieve their greatness despite considerable injuries. You make clear that Mantle was very personal for you, but what was it about Sandy Koufax that got you interested in doing a book on him?
Well, honestly, it wasn't my idea. It was David Hershey's idea, and a damn good one. And he came to me or to my agent, with the notion. And frankly, my first reaction was quite stupid. It was like, nah, I don't want to do that. I don't like what he did to Mickey in 63,
I'm sorry, who's Mr. Hershey?
David is the editor of the book, okay. Or both books at HarperCollins, I'm sorry. The biggest difference for me in writing these two books, aside from the fact that one's alive and one's not, and one's dark, one's light, one's a pitcher, one's a hitter, one's Jewish, one's, Commerce, Oklahoma, was that I couldn't pretend a faux objectivity about Mickey. There are other books that other people could have written about him, and God knows there's plenty of them that people have written about him, some quite good, but this is the only one I could write.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also didn't have access to Koufax, did you?
I detailed pretty carefully and explicitly in the preface to that book what I don't want to call it a deal because it wasn't really a deal, but, what Sandy was and was not willing to do. He still refers to it as an unauthorized biography by a neat lady, which I love. He said to me early on and then consistently thereafter, I really would rather this not be done, but if it's going to be done, I would rather it be done right. And therefore, what he was willing to do was to tell people it was okay to talk to me, about him. And I could call him up to verify matters of fact.
But he would not talk with you directly.
Right. I mean, he would not be quoted. He did talk to me directly.
Right.
He just didn't. He was not talking for the record about anything.
I think that's there was such a coup in the documentary Jews in Baseball when he finally agreed, for perhaps the first time, to speak on the record.
He's spoken on the record a lot. He just hasn't done it, in a book that is specifically about him, which I understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's completely consistent with the guy that, 500 people described to me. It doesn't surprise me in the least. And one of the misnomers about Koufax is that he was this recluse. And people still tell me, people who've read the book still tell me this. And I go, no, he's not a recluse. A recluse is somebody who avoids people. Koufax merely avoids being a public, being public property. Two very, very different things. And, a distinction that I think is vast. And not everybody agrees with me about that, apparently, or sees the distinction that I see. Sandy is not a misanthrope. He's not a, he's not a recluse. He has a zillion friends. He calls people all the time. That's a recluse, I don't buy that that's who he is, and I don't think that's the man I described.
The success.
I know what I was going to say. And remember, in the day when he was pitching, mm-hmm. he was always at his locker to answer questions. He wasn't Steve Carlton. Mm-hmm. He didn't go hide in training rooms. We didn't feel like answering questions. Now, the questions may not have been particularly personal. They may not have been, you know, the number and the kind of media onslaught there would be on a daily basis today. But you look, and, you know, he talked every time he pitched. He talked to, and he talked to reporters. He was talking all the time. It was just baseball. It wasn't, you know, who he was going out with or not going out with, and, you know, how he felt about Walter Alston or didn't feel, and, you know, all that. You know, it was different kind of coverage.
Have you noticed an increase in interest in that book since The Last Boy came out?
Yeah.
And what
I mean, I haven't checked the statistics. They did bring out a new paperback edition of it last spring, I think, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I think you could. I could find out for you. I think there's an
update. I noticed that anecdotally whenever I go on Amazon and I do my research about the top sellers of the week, and, you know, Koufax has been up there quite a lot. What about your novel Squeeze Play?
You know, yesterday I was getting off a plane in Boston, and from Boston to in Washington, and I stood up and I saw this book on the seat of the passenger in front of me, and I said, it looked awfully familiar, and I said, could you turn that over? Could I see that front of that book? And I turned it over, and it was Squeeze Play, and they'd taken it out of the library. I think it had the plastic kind of sheathing that you had library books, and I said, oh, I wrote that. And these people looked at me and went, you're Jane Levy? And I went, yeah, that's me. And the guy said, well, we've been sitting here talking about the Mantle book, you know, the whole trip. And I said, well, okay. And he said, I've noticed some similarities, you know. And I said, oh, you're a good reader. You're a careful reader. Because there were parts of Squeeze Play that were inspired by Mantle and by the things that happened with him in Atlantic City that I couldn't write as fact at the time.
So which did you enjoy doing the novel?
Oh, I loved it.
And which do you find easier or more, if not easier, more rewarding?
It's a completely different muscle. It's like the difference between exercising, you know, your triceps and your quadriceps. And I haven't written fiction in a long time. I'm supposed to be writing, my next book is supposed to be a novel about Babe Ruth.
I was going to ask what your next project is.
I have a contract to do that with HarperCollins. And I would very much like to go back to writing fiction, if only because I think those quadriceps are getting a little flabby.
Hi, we've been speaking with Jane Levy, author of The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle, and The End of America's Childhood. Jane, thank you so much.
Ron, my pleasure, and if you need some more time to follow up, please just let me know, okay?
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
That was our interview with Jane Levy, author of The Last Boy, Mickey Mantle, and The End of America's Innocence. Tune in again next time when our guest will be Joseph Wallace, author of Diamond Ruby, and several other nonfiction books on the history of baseball. Until then, check out the bookshelf on iTunes, and catch you later on Ron Kaplan's baseballbookshelf.com.
Look out, kid. Here it comes.